Things that I will do during the show, because I get distracted when I'm talking, is things like forgetting to put the next record on, which I just about did, as Adam and Larry and Bono and The Edge join us. Welcome to Radio 1. It's been about 3 years.
It has, Mark. Nice to be here.
It's nice to see you back, and, you know, we were all sort of fathoming upstairs why you chose to come on this show, and for whatever reason, thanks very much, you know. I know you don't do many interviews, and you don't do that many bits of talking, but now we've got you, we're going to make you talk. How long have you spent, I mean, what kind of things have you done since this album came out, because you've been so quiet in the press?
We thought everyone was just sick of hearing us talk, so we decided that we wouldn't, not until we figured out what we wanted to say. So
what do we want to say, man?
We're still trying to get it together, but maybe we'll find out tonight. I don't know, we just didn't want to do interviews, basically, because it was the predictable thing to do, and also what happens is you finish an album, immediately after you finish an album you got to go off and start explaining yourself, and it's just the wrong moment to try and do that because you're so wrapped up in it. And so we just thought we wouldn't do that this time. We'd take a bit of a break and then see if we wanted to do anything later on. So we're starting to do a few things now.
You've kind of done it the opposite way around, as you say, from usual, and the reaction to it has been, in some senses, opposite from usual, Larry, because most intelligent critics, see, I'm bringing you in here, most intelligent critics have applauded what you've done with this album. You know, they've said it's brave and it's different or whatever. I'm not sure that you really care what the critics say, but there are only just a few sad people who are hoping for a Joshua Tree 2 who failed to appreciate it. Are you pleased that it's had that kind of effect?
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I'm... Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard anyone say that they wanted another Joshua Tree.
No, yeah. But you know, you've come away though from the situation where people would have an expectation of hearing a similar kind of thing on the next album, haven't delivered that.
We've never done that on any of our records.
Adam, you're not worried about the loss of the kind of less loyal fans at all, are you?
I don't know if they're lost.
I'm not sure that they are either, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not so much that we would be losing fans. I think it's the fact that we would be gaining them on this record. You know, some people do stop buying records for whatever reason, but I don't think it's because Acting Baby is inaccessible.
I'm not sure that really is. Why did it take so long to deliver? I mean, it sounds like a very immediate album,
which is very, very slow.
Well,
reason.
I suppose it was a little while since Rattle and Hum. I mean, I suppose a year in the making.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was slow. I think it's very fast for us.
Is this the shape of things to come for you two?
I don't know what's going to come next.
Mm. We've given up actually trying to figure out how it comes or why it comes. We just wait until it's there and then we just put it out, you know. And it does seem to take us a long time to get it together, but... you know, people are patient, and eventually we do.
Fans are rewarded. Yeah, I mean, you implied by that there was a time when you did think more about it.
Well, out of necessity, early on, we really didn't have any time to think about whether an album was finished. We just had to put it out, whether it was finished or not. But now, because we're mega rock stars, we can actually wait around a little longer and get it right, which is great. I must say, it's a lot nicer than having to get it out after 4 weeks.
You recorded bits of it in Berlin just after the war came down. In fact, we were we did a program in Berlin about 6 months after you were there, Bono, and we went to the Hansa Studios and
Bono,
when you were I suppose in a very special place there. When we did a brief interview in there, it felt magical.
Hansa Studios being a special place, or Berlin?
Well, both really, but Hansa was, you know, we kind of did a whistle stop tour. You had some time there.
That's where I saw you before.
Yeah, very.
The old grey whistle stop.
He's on later, actually, the old grey whistle stop. He's on at midnight. Or Bob
Hansa. Is
Yeah, Bob will be here.
Great.
Cool guy, man.
He might even come in and say hello now we've mentioned him. Hansa.
It's a great rock and roll room. A lot of good records were made there, and our engineer had worked there a lot, and it seemed like the place to be right at that time. And we arrived there just as that whole German, you know, tearing down the wall and the two sides getting together and all that. It was quite a trip, really.
You got the idea for the Trabants.
The Trabants thing, I don't know quite where that came from. Probably Anton Corbin, his rather Beckett-like sense of humour, probably.
Every morning we'd drive into the studio and there'd be a new burnt-out Trabi on the side of the road with some guy had been trying to make it from some obscure part of East Germany, and his car had just made it and he just had to leave it on the side of the road, and it became a bit of a joke. You just see these things.
Some of them melt in the rain, did you know that?
I believe it with the acid rain in the east, you know. That's going to take a very long time to clean up. Yeah. But the room at Hansa, just describe it to the listener, it was like a... You could almost imagine a very old sort of town hall in the UK. It was just like, it was dirty. I mean, it was kind of in no way smart and tidy. Even the equipment was like hardly working.
Well, in fact, it was closed down almost before when they took the booking for our album. It actually since has closed down. It's one of those great old studios with where the emphasis is on the sound, not the actual hardware. And we were looking for a big room which would just be great to play in, and we wanted to, you know, do the records like they used to, just sitting around in a circle and playing the songs. But, you know, those studios, sadly, are really out of favour now. Mm.
It was an old Nazi, SS ballroom, which is kind of a bad vibe, really.
A chilling thought.
Yeah,
but you
it
don't
is.
Think about it when you're there, do you?
No, it's kind of odd that it seems like the music has driven those demons out, because there were no bad vibes there when we were there, other than, you know, Edge of Smelly Feet or whatever.
Adam, tell me about the other major place where you recorded, which was somewhere you rented overlooking Dublin Bay, which sounds like a bit of a contrast.
Dogtown. Dogtown was kind of very different. Didn't really... The hardware was all right and the decor was...
Did you hire the gear in as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we just set up this place where we liked the view and kind of settled in there and put equipment in and just carried on recording. I think a lot of times people who design recording studios design them for other people who like equipment and shiny objects. And as we're musicians, we actually prefer a good atmosphere to work in. Mm. So we just look for places that are inspiring. And I think, you know, both Dogtown and Hansa were inspiring places to create in. And that's much more important than what kind of, you know, equipment there is, whether there's a kind of Sony or whatever written on it. It doesn't really matter.
Mm, sure.
As long as the tape is running when we're doing what we do, that's what we're looking for.
In the past, you've done things like releasing demos and sort of outtakes, special things on B-sides. You did a remix with Youth of Night and Day, but you've moved more into remixing, certainly with the last single, Mysterious Ways, Bono. Are you...
he sort of just...
I looked you in the eye there.
And he knows.
Are you... You haven't succumbed to the current record industry trend for making dance success out of non-dance acts, have you?
Say that again. Slowly.
You haven't succumbed to the current record industry trend of making dance hits from non-dance acts by remixing.
I always thought we were a dance act.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought that until I actually tried to dance to one of our songs. Then I found out we weren't.
I just started out life in a dance band. That was this whole thing. Sly and the Family Stone and that.
Yeah, not many people know that, but I actually was...
Sly.
I was Sly in the previous life.
You wanted to be.
No, the whole dance thing is really, really... It's huge in Ireland. Mm. The Foxtrot and the waltz.
The Dashing White Sergeant.
The waltz is amazing. Like, if you're really stuck, say if you're in the middle of a gig and it's just going all wrong, just try the Foxtrot.
Gets them up.
Yeah, gets them.
You were kind of caught, Bono, with your comments last time on the air here when you talked with Annie and the late Roger Scott about bootlegs, because, of course, some of the Achtung Baby material was bootlegged, and I can't That's imagine right. that you were happy about that.
You know, you don't want to get too worked up about it.
Did you have somebody's legs broken?
Yeah, man. I could have yours broken.
If I carry on this line of questioning.
You don't put on another record. But, no, the thing is about bootlegs is the only thing that can piss you off is if people are charging a lot of money for something that isn't very good. And that was maybe the story on this one, the gobbledygook bootleg from Berlin. But there are, and it was just like having your notebook read out. That's the bit I didn't like about it. But there was
your private diary or whatever, yeah.
Well, I mean, there was no great, undiscovered works of genius, unfortunately. It was more just gobbledygook. But there were a few bits and pieces on that bootleg that I actually, when I got a copy of the bootleg, I had to go out and buy one, of course.
Where did you buy it, incidentally?
I have friends in the right place.
I want one. Listen, we're talking with you too. We're going to talk some more. We'll play a song from James and then something else, and then we'll get the guys back on. Two in the studio, we have Adam and Larry and Bono and The Edge, and let's just wrap up some talk here about Achtung Baby, and then we're going to talk about touring, because there are people phoning up saying, gigs. You're consistent in some respects, because you continue to work with, Eno and Lily White and Lanois. Is that because you know them so well, or vice versa? Adam, maybe this question to you, because you have an understanding.
They're cheap, move actually. Too fast across the room there to catch your eye.
Or is it that you prefer the innovation to come from within the band, rather than taking risks with an unknown producer?
I think we just think they're the best for us, if we came across someone else that we thought could do it and could collaborate, we would. But I think Dan and Brian both bring something to the project that gets the best out of us.
Mm. I read the brief interview that you did, Bono, with an Irish radio station when the album came out. You called him in or something.
That's right.
And you said, we don't want to talk about this album. But it's quite interesting because you have
called them up and told them I didn't want to talk to them.
You've had
that's
this
very rock and roll.
It is really, isn't it? You've had this sort of time to elapse since, and in that time there have been articles like Eno's article in Rolling Stone. You've had sort of other people speaking on your behalf about the album. Have you felt that, it must feel strange?
No.
The people all right, always tell you your baby looks like you.
You asked that question a minute ago, didn't you, about why we're not speaking?
No, I said that off the air. I said I was going to ask you, but this is a terrible thing. This is a tip for the listener. If you're interviewing famous people, don't tell them what you're going to ask them.
All right. it's just the only reason, sometimes you appear if you turn up on the radio or you turn up in papers talking about what you do, it appears like you're sort of selling it.
Mm.
And that's right. And we're here to sell the record. No, I mean, we just didn't want to just put that, because when a record comes out from a big rock and roll band, there's all the billboards and all that stuff that goes with it, and you just don't want to add to the madness, so we just kept quiet. As I think Edge was saying, it's hard to make sense after you've been in a hole for about 6 months, and you come out and you think, don't think straight, right. So that's, a lot of people, they're probably better off.
Are you thinking straight now?
I'm not sure.
Because you have been working all day shooting videos.
I'm not sure, I'll let the others talk.
So we know why you haven't done the sort of traditional thing and toured Achtung Baby on its release, because you want to let it settle in. You're now Larry. This is back to you now, Larry. Okay, I'm being brave for the second time. How will this tour?
That's a question. Yeah, I just said yes. I mean, what more do you want?
Okay, how will this tour that you're about to do differ from what you've done before? Will it be different?
I think we'll sort of know what we're doing this time around. As opposed to we'll actually know the songs. We'll be learning
them
at sound check. Yeah, we'll actually have a set list.
Will you have other musicians?
No, we won't. What we've done is we've interviewed some machines, and I'm playing percussion for the whole tour, and Adam's playing bass pedals, and the machines are doing the rest. That's basically it.
Believe it when you see it.
No, we're just flirting with the machine.
Bono and Edge are staying at home.
But you see, this will be good news to sort of long time U2 fans, Edge, because they think that the chemistry is very important, and they don't like the idea of having other people on the stage.
Well, yeah, we actually did think seriously about bringing extra musicians in, but it's almost like we just have this almost sentimental attachment to the four piece, I don't know why, but it just seemed like four people on stage is what it's about for us. And we've always used technology to fill out our sound.
She's the engineer. She made sure that comment was caught on the air.
Okay, sorry.
Where was I? Oh, yeah.
You were halfway through an answer, sorry.
Yeah,
I remember what you were going to say.
I do, yeah. I was making a very important point.
You're just a sentimental guy.
Technology, you're a sentimental guy.
We're just using the technology to fill out the sound, but it's
every
still basically
appendage on this man's body is pressing some kind of important button.
Not for the first time, I'd imagine.
Not for the first time.
The ironic thing, I think, in music is...
Actually, there was a really embarrassing line of promotion on our very first album when we arrived in America, and we were feeling pretty cool for about a minute, and then... They described the Edge as a man of 1,000 guitars. They thought this was very exciting.
The Green Tornado, I think, was also...
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up. I was described as the Green Tornado. It's, yeah, you know...
It was ironic since I only had one guitar at
the
stage.
Time, yeah.
And a memory man. Wasn't that your... Wasn't that...
That was the first Echo unit.
There's
a lot... His style of stage is like... Fuck, it's like NASA. I mean, it is like Cape
Well
Canaveral,
controlled.
Every thing. Bless you, man. No, you know, it's really... It's a very complicated thing that he does. Mm. And...
Well, you see, you don't need pedals when you're singing.
No, I don't. No, it's...
Except actually, pedal for the first
pushers.
Track on Achtung Baby in Zoo Station. Now, you might need someone on your voice for that when you do it.
Pedal pushers. I'm all into them. It's cycle chic.
It's a very perverse thing, though, you
Could
see, because
be
you're talking about, you know, the nucleus of a band. You know, the Jam were great because they were a three-piece. Lots of the great small bands have actually had more energy than this, you know, you sort of... You know, you Phil Collins when he performs live has, you know, horn section, loads and loads of people, and it actually seems sometimes to be less kind of immediate, less direct.
Yeah.
Leave Phil alone.
He's a now, one of the criticisms, if I may be so bold, of you two is that you seem to start tours always in America. You rarely seem to start them at home in Ireland or in the UK.
Started the last one in Australia, man.
Yeah, that's what I mean, far away. I mean, why do the longest fans have
the weather
to
is much better.
Apart from that.
Well, that is the reason.
We
to be
just
honest.
Don't want to screw up in front of the longest fans.
What a nice, polite answer. Can you confirm the British dates?
No.
Please.
Yes,
we are doing some British dates.
Yeah, I know that. Where?
Earl's Court in London. I think.
Right.
No.
He's lying, by the way.
No. Earl's Court in London.
Oh, you're going to do Wembley.
SCC in Scotland. Manchester, we want to play. We're going to play one really. We want to play one for like free concert if we can. We want to play here, and this is this is our sort of core rock and roll audience is over here and in Ireland, we're not playing Ireland. No, there must be a reason.
I read somewhere you're going to do a big gig in the summer.
We'd really like to. It's just, it's important. We haven't been to America, believe it or not, for about 5 years, whereas we have been in Europe, like I think recently. And
not actually that recently.
Actually,
however,
2 days ago.
Well, we're here now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important, and
so there'll be what, 3 or 4 gigs in the UK probably.
Well, and we'll come back if we're still enjoying playing live. We want to come back. The tour could go on for a long time or a short time, depending on if it's going well and if we're getting a good feeling from the music.
The machines behave.
It may sound selfish, but I mean, we do actually play live a lot, but the world does seem to be getting bigger. Mm. And you want to see new places. You know, you want to go to South America. You want to go to
Holland.
Yeah.
I can understand why.
And listen, man. What have the Poles ever done to you?
Well, they drew, didn't they?
They what?
They drew?
They drew.
That's true, yeah.
They won all the European championships.
Yeah.
So these dates they'll be confirmed soon?
They will be confirmed soon. And that's,
there are some which we haven't actually got together yet, so there's no point giving you an incomplete list.
It's just...
It just sets everybody into a panic. If you do... Who will support you on these dates? I understand that in America it's going to be the Pixies.
Yeah.
Who in this country?
We haven't decided.
Any ideas?
Send in your votes.
Teenage Fan Club would be good.
Yeah.
Actually, Carter are putting a rumour around, Carter the Unstoppable Sex Machine, that you want them on the tour. They hope
support them, but they wouldn't have us.
we won't have people in short trousers on our tour.
Okay, one more serious question before we play another song. You, as far as I'm aware, haven't done sponsorship on tours.
Right.
Everybody else is doing it. Every sort of major rock act is doing it.
We're too stupid.
There's nothing ideological about this, then?
It's just embarrassing. I mean, you know, most people, you know, the great outdoors have to bend over for a book, you know, just to, you know, pay the rent or whatever. I think it's just horrible to see rock and roll stars doing it because they've got a shitload of dough anyway.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with the idea of... I mean, we're already on through Ireland and through all these big... corporations, they're in your pants somewhere. So, I mean, the idea of, like, being precious and being separate from all that is bullshit.
Mm.
So it's nothing on that level. It's just the embarrassment of seeing somebody wrap their arms around a Coke can and kiss it, you know, for money.
Like MC Hammer.
And they don't
whatever.
Need
yeah.
the money.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing. It's just that it's embarrassing to see rock and roll bend over.
I think if it's something that we're using, you know, if it's...
Condoms.
Or musical
Condoms, Jack Daniels, who else could sponsor your tour effectively?
it's not a big deal. I mean, we've always... I mean, for instance... I don't know who it is. Who's it to do your drums?
Yamaha.
Right. People like...
They'll be pleased with
it. I mean, no, but people like that, you know, who... your gear, your strings on your guitar, that's always happened. You know, so that we don't... You don't want to get too sanctimonious about it. But it's just where you draw the line. Also, for young bands, I can't blame them, you know, if they want to appear on a... whatever it is, you know, sponsored act, and they've no money and this goes on. You know.
Yeah, it's something not to do. I mean, there are a lot of beer companies in Ireland and some soft drinks companies who sponsor... festivals and things like that for bands, and there's nothing wrong with that.
That's a good thing if you can get good bands on because of it.
Yeah, I think that that's fair enough. So it's not that sort of sponsorship.
Mm.
And sometimes people misunderstand what the point is.
Mm.
It's not all sponsorship. It's just that, you know, as Bono says, big rock stars kicking foot.
Actually, you know, there are some pretty good sponsorship things going on where, you know, like young bands who... because there are a lot of venues now, actually, that ask young bands to pay money to play in the venues, like pay to get your audience.
That's
you
bollocks. And the same with big rock and roll bands that are, you know, they pay these fat bastards to get on their tour. You know, and
you can
that's
say fat on the air, it's okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, you can say fat.
All right. But that's another thing. I mean, rock and roll is a very seriously capitalist take advantage of your, you know, of whatever you can type. I mean, it's incredible. You read about all this, you know, the independent music scene and credibility, and you just see the way these people treat their road crews. You see the way they... it's incredible, the double standards in rock and roll, really.
We're going to play some more music.
It's really incredible.
It is incredible.
It's a shocking
thing.
We'll
come back and talk about that.
It's absolutely shocking.
We're going to play the Blake Babies here. You might like this.
God bless
you. Like the
Blake Babies.
You like the intros on these records with Blake.
I prefer the intros to the records.
Are better than the songs?
Oftentimes.
All right, see what you think.
Same with you too, mate.
Temptation Eyes, Blake Babies. Yeah, talk too much with the turns, with the stars, while the records are playing, and you forget they're just about to finish. Okay, Blake Babies, Temptation Eyes, you didn't hear that, did you? So you don't know whether you liked it or not.
We can put our clothes on now.
Please. Just because you do those sorts of things on album covers, you don't have to do it in here. Where were we? You've been quite supportive as a band of Radio 1 in the past, and it's a quite major changes coming up in broadcasting in the future. Things are pretty uncertain, you know, lots of other national stations.
Political moves in the dark.
I would have thought there's a few of those sorts of things. How would you react to Radio 1 taking ads or maybe being hived off from the rest of the BBC because they don't think it's a public service broadcasting?
You kick my ball and I'll scratch yours. Or something like that. What are you saying again about BBC's? I think that'd be a very bad thing to pull the plug on the BBC. It's one of the best things about this bloody place.
One of the things, though, is that they say that, you know, commercial radio is playing pop and rock, so Radio 1 is not necessary.
I think the thing about Radio 1 is that there are still shows that will kind of play new records and play vinyl records, even.
Well, even this show plays vinyl.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's got to be preserved, because if you don't have stimulating radio, you don't have stimulated music happening.
Yeah, look at America.
The whole process slows down.
You know, look at American radio at the moment. I mean, it's in a terrible state, and it's because of...
We're number one, by the way.
Well, exactly. That proves it. No, because of the fact that it is commercial. I mean, And it's happening in Ireland,
formats.
Actually, unfortunately. RT is losing out to a huge influx of commercial radio.
And some of them are good, though.
Yeah, but there's a lot
of
them.
You need competition, you know.
The BBC's happy to have competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad news. I mean,
I love BBC. I mean, where else would you? I mean, on the World Service there last week, I was listening to there's an hour long program on owl droppings. I mean, where else would you?
You
hear
and
that?
Terry Waite both love the World Service. Last time you were here, Bonner, you said you'd like to do a session for
owl
Radio
droppings. Hold on a second.
Anyway.
I'd just like to get into this owl droppings.
It was on the spot report. From the tawny owl. I kid you not, it was brilliant.
What is the story on the owl?
the furry vole, that seemed to be his major diet. That was, they were going through the whole thing. It was brilliant. Now, you'd never get that on a commercial station, let's be honest, would you?
I sincerely hope not. Last time you were here, Bono, you said you'd like to do a Radio 1 session again. When would you like to do it? I'll sort it out. I'll fix it.
We'd love to. I love live radio. That's why we're.
He would like to.
Would you like to do it, Larry?
Well, I don't think so. But Bono would like to do it.
Adam,
I'm happy to listen to it when Bono does it. No problem.
No, I like live radio. I think it's good. It's just trying to talk these bastards into it. No, I mean it is actually. It's hard. Why aren't we doing it?
Because we don't care.
At the same time.
Yes. See, they don't care about you.
Mm. Well,
I care.
That's understandable. We only met an hour ago.
They don't like you.
That's fair enough.
I love you.
Why are you doing a documentary? Why are there cameras in here? Wasn't Rattle and Hum a documentary?
Oh, man, they follow us from everywhere. Even when we're not making records.
I don't know. Come on, you sort it out. You're in charge of your own destiny here.
It's the whole... Yeah, it is. It's Planet Narcissus, man. This is for our own viewing. As well as playing with each other, we like to look at each other.
At home with you too.
What happens is, like, you get so big that you can't write a diary. You know? So you hire a film crew to remind you of where you've been and what you've done.
Very good.
That's right, holiday snaps.
Yeah. You don't even send them off to get them processed, they do it for you.
In fact, it's Michael Jackson's film crew. He sent a camera crew over to observe us in our natural habitat.
He needs to learn something, I think.
For his archive.